Thank you, Elliot.
Yeah.
It seems like the Rambam for Hefkia Metzia, for the most part, doesn't have Rashi's definition of Anim Yafetucha and thinks that if you get Hefkia, it's yours, fine. It's nothing really bad except for two cases where it's the Nechasei Goy, where you have to take, where he makes the guy pay back the first person who paid the non-Jew. And with the Kohen Sima, the poor person who puts his stuff on the payer, you fine him.
Okay, so let's say, right, so you said that there is a paradigm and there are exceptions, and the paradigm is that the Rambam holds like a Rabbeinu Tam.
Or sort of like what to me is Pshat in the Gemara. He doesn't add, I would put it as more, he doesn't add Rashi's definition of Ani Me'a Pechucha is Hefkir, and therefore doesn't have this idea of Nikra Rashi by Hefkir.
Why do you presume that Rabbeinu Tam is Pshat and Rashi is Nedrish, which of course biases towards Rashi anyway?
Because Rashi has to add a word, has to, because the way I first understood Ani Me'a Pechucha was biased by Zastra, who defined Mapecha's negotiation and didn't have...
Aha! Okay, so that's a really interesting ground. Right? You think that the definition of Mapech is negotiation,
yeah,
and therefore is a transaction. Yes. Interesting. Does the Rambam ever directly discuss the case of Mapech Bechor?
No, but he has this weird language by the Kedushin, which is that you're Nikra Rasha for taking the woman without telling your friend, and also adds in Mekachu Memcha, though there he also has to be moda that he adds the language of Asur, which we didn't see before.
And he leaves out on Hapech Becharar as a case.
Right.
But it just becomes a metaphor. He ignores the metaphor, because the Gemara is only a Mashal, and he only gives it an Inshal.
I don't think we saw any place where he talks about the case itself that's presented in the Gemara with buying land.
Is that true?
Sorry, what
no.
Did you say? Does he talk about, or does he not talk about the case of Gilam Rabbi Abba?
Yeah,
he does. Jenna, what does he say about
it? Like specifically about that case?
Yeah.
Or this?
Or just about land?
A parallel case. He talks about land.
So tell me what you think he says about that.
So he talks about the Shaliach situation specifically, right? It's interesting, he has a line that, like, the Shaliach leaves the money at slow, which Tobin and I were trying to figure out, does that mean he just doesn't take the money with him at all? That he, like, never takes the money actually from the first guy, like, makes it clear that he's not being Shaliach with him, or he just, like, pays with his own money?
I think it means he pays with his own money.
Okay, because it's a weird, it's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's low. He leaves them with him. I think that's right.
Okay.
But so he talks about the case of buying land by Shliach, but he doesn't talk about the case of Rabbi Gil. In the transition of the Gemara, the Gemara moves from Shliach
to
Rabbi Gil and Rabbi Abba.
Right.
So we have the case of the Bagi that we saw.
You're right before.
Right. That's paralleled with the Kedushin, but he doesn't have the Rabbi Gil and Rabbi Abba case.
Yeah,
no, I think that's right. Right, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's a whole fascinating. Right? So that's a fascinating thing. So we have every, basically, I guess I would say, right, every other Risha takes that as a paradigm.
That's true.
Does Rambam quote a Gadita though?
I don't know.
He read it like Rabbi Levine, so it's in the Gadita.
So that's the whole right. So there's no. But Ani Lapech Becharara.
Did we see the myth on that sugya?
Yeah, we see the riff.
Because the riff on the other thing about Rambam is he basically passions like the riff on the sugya and Barabasha, most namely by leaving out Mitzvah Hadad.
Uh huh.
So he might just be passing like the riff by leaving.
But
out.
He also yeah, goes against the riff and passions for the candy case, whereas the riff had left it out.
Okay, good. What else? Yes, Elliot.
I mean, I want to say that separately, but by Kedushin, it just says that the second guest Mekadosh her. And he doesn't say, like,
He says what?
He just says, in the Ashes, he says that the second guy is Mekadosher.
Yeah.
And he doesn't say whether it's good or bad.
Really?
He doesn't say,
Really? Mekadosher. Okay, just test your Zion, right?
What?
When you just test your Zion, right?
Yeah. Although, it's...
So let's read the whole thing through it. Let's see.
I read maliciously bizarre and lashed it to the Ethan Lech Messiah Mizuz. We can't
vote Shalishim Yem. So which case are you reading?
First case.
Tet
Yuzayin? Tet Yuzayin. Oh, no. I'm reading Yuzayin Yud.
You're reading Yuzayin Yud. That's true. But in Tet Yuzayin, he says something very different, doesn't he?
Vosos Lossos Kane, fine.
He says,
Vosos Lossos Kane.
He says more than that. What does he say?
Nicarussia.
Now, here's the problem. Where does the language of Nicarussia come from?
The title is do you want to say that this woman can't be found elsewhere? I mean, do you want to say that there are thousands of fish in the sea? No pun intended. And that's why...
No, I don't even want to go there. I just want to make a simple literary point. Right, a simple literary point is that he left out the case, but he preserves the language.
Because he looks at the whole sugya.
Yes,
the end of the sugya is on Yima. What do you do? Ah, Nicarussia.
But it's not the same case because there's no shliach in the other case. Good. So Rabbi, what do you want to say? Because there's no shliach, and he sees it as a fundamentally the same case. It just happens to involve slightly different circumstances. Okay, so one logical way of approaching it is to say that
what the Rambam thinks is that the shlichus aspect of it is not relevant to the moral character.
Especially if shulcha dam kimoso, then like if it's the same person.
No, because we thought that what was wrong, what was wrong was that we thought you were the same person, and really you're not the same person, right? That's what we thought. It can go circular in a certain point.
I don't know.
I mean, unless the Rambam sort of thinks that the whole says that when the Gemara says I am Hagar Kfar, it only means that you're shliach. Lubachem Ela means you were shliach and you were in his trust.
And so you want to claim that the Rambam has a radically different reading than the Hapik Becharor case, but. How does it for Gidl and Rabbi Abba? There's no shlichus because Rabbi Abba doesn't know about Rabbi Gidl.
Yeah. But he's in quote that case, doesn't he?
But he says Nicarussia. This is our problem. Right?
No, but I'm saying maybe the Rambam thinks that right. That's just a rhetorical device.
It's Sugya Deshmaisa.
No, I'm saying it's the exact same as the Thevet Mouth thing, right? He didn't kill anyone. He didn't steal it, right? It's the rhetorical device.
Yeah, but
he wants him to realize that you're in the same boat, even if you didn't technically do whatever would be required to get there.
I'm lost. You didn't technically do it. The problem is the Gemara says Nicarussia about the case which is less than the Shlichus case, where there is no Shlichus and you're just interested anyway.
Which case?
And you're going to be
right. But unless
the Gemara says that's Nicarussia.
The Gemara can call Nicarussia, right? Someone comes to him and says, what's the halakha here? And he's supposed to realize one from the other. Like, then why do you do
that? Aha, you think it's just a rhetorical device that he's supposed to realize that he's almost as bad as somebody who did this with a shliach.
Yeah.
Aha.
But there's a problem with that, because we have a rhetorical device in the shlichut marriage case that's used in the other case that's right under this in our source, the minhag lamaut. So if this is just a rhetorical device, why won't you just use the rhetorical device that's used? It's also a problem that comes up with the kinat sofim and versus Hashem chavetamant shikar yagil to the idea. But here it's even more profound that he's choosing the other case, and it seems like he, because he's relating the second half of his halacha v'chol said the vash there the kayot sebo b'shkarch v'vei makakul memcha nekra rasha that. It seems like if I was to be Rambam here, it's that the Tzidkun case, maybe it's not Nicarussia, but Met Kachum Memcha, which is Sedani Met Pekachara, is.
The problem is, but what Elia is correct about is that he uses the language of Ramayan about the same Met Kachum Memcha case when he talks about the Met Kachum Memcha.
So maybe he says that, maybe he says the same thing. He says Asur, he says Nikar.
So he's the person who equates the terms, Nikar Rasha.
Does he tell us that Nikar Rasha means anything?
Nope, he does not tell us.
Then it means the same as Minhagra Ma'u.
Could be.
It's just moral programming.
Yeah, but from Minhagra Ma'u, it's Masha Sa'asoy.
And Masha Sa'as?
And for Nikar Rasha, it's Asur.
Yes, but Harezo Mikadosh Shaliyah, Masha Sa'asui. El Shanahagwa Minhagra Ma'u, which is equivalent in the Rambam to Nikar Rasha. Bad.
And it's equivalent to us. So Miriam Vesky, is it equivalent to Asur?
Don't do it. It's wrong. If you did it, it worked.
So you are deliberately conflating it's wrong and it's asur.
Whereas I think that what a lot of other people are assuming is that the whole point of the language of Nikra Rasha and Nihagra Ma'in is that it's not Asur, it's just wrong.
Rambam says it is Asur.
I mean, he says it's Asur here.
What does it mean?
Right,
he
it's the lesson by kissing your sister, right? Dabar Maguna Vasar Hu. Meaning it's not Asur Kribila Rias, but he calls it Dabar Asur anyway.
So,
what does it mean for something to be Asur if it works? Something's really Asur, it wouldn't work.
Why? Maybe
it wouldn't. But like, he's saying this is Asur, but it works.
Right, but why does he have to say it's not? What's the Asur?
Don't do it. I don't understand your question.
So, are you a panhalachist, which you assume that things will only be wrong if they're usher, or that everything which is usher is wrong, and everything which is wrong is usher? Is that your position?
No, maybe that's the position of Rambam.
Ah.
You can find ways in Rambam to say that doing bad things is usher.
It's a lot of the
CCA. We're pulling religious state out and saying it's just a question of definition of terms.
Sure.
I really don't like that article.
I really
don't like that article. Right?
I'm telling you that like this seems straightforward in Rambam. If Rambam doesn't want to tell us what Nikra Rasha is, and it's coming from the same place as Nahagva Minagarma'u, it's pulling towards the Gemara, he thinks they mean the same thing, and they're both Asur, and it still works anyway.
And he doesn't use the language of Asur by Mechira, though.
We have to look here.
Wait,
what
he says,
here.
Anyone who does this, what do you mean?
In Mechira, all he says is, Masha Asa Asui, Barehu Bichal HaRamayim.
But he doesn't say that.
Yeah, so in Ishus, he says that both. He seems to think that. Well, I shouldn't say we could be very mediating. And what he does in Ishus, what he says is, if you do this in terms of kedushin, it works, but it's asur. And then he says anybody who does this anything like it in terms of mekach u'memkar, that's right. It's called a rasha. He doesn't say that it's asur by mekach u'memkar.
He also doesn't say that it works.
I'm saying he doesn't have to repeat himself.
He doesn't have to repeat himself because he knows that you read Hilchos Mechira.
Yeah, he thinks everybody's reading the whole thing all
you're
the time.
You're in Hilchos Ishus. They keep memorizing.
He thinks you have the whole Rambam in your head, and we'll be tied to you.
I don't know. Is there a kushya that goes beyond the linguistic level?
I am interested, I think, and I think that in the phenomenon of somebody who takes language from a sugya while excluding the case to which about which the sugya used that language. You're not bothered.
I am not buying into the assumption that the Rambam is doing super duper fancy things.
So we're having a broad methodological.
Yes.
And this is what I was supposed to respond. Maybe the Rambam is secretly hiding his deep right. That's the only way you could respond to that is by claiming it's right, by making a Straussian argument. There isn't any other way to respond, is there?
I don't know. I think if you read Rambam, Dhamma and everything that Rambam writes everywhere else, he's not doing anything fancy anymore.
Okay. So now at least I know where we are. We're in a methodological
argument. I'm sorry.
We're in a methodological argument. That's fine. That's useful to know. Yes, let me know.
I mean, working on the assumption that the Rambam is hypersensitive and super fancy, we could say that he's using Nikra Rasha here as a pun. It makes sense to use it in Ishud because of Ve'eshud Re'u Latima. Ve'eshud Re'u Latima, right? So like that, maybe he's playing off of that Gemara.
That's
super fancy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're super fancy.
That makes a great deal of sense.
Okay, but now we have had.
I'm just saying it's not like this. The phrase Nikra Rasha only appears with Ani Ma'apek Bechara. Although I agree that that's what we immediately thought of because we've been learning the sugya. But,
no, but
like,
this case
not
is directly preceding
it. Nikra Rasha is
like,
right after the case he's talking about.
Yeah, so it's not.
And the Ein Mitzvah Neir Mitzvah seems to think they're the same.
Because he references it here.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes, Ellie.
I wonder, this is a silly question, but what's harder to be chal? A mekach memkar or a kedushin?
That's a good question.
What do you mean it's harder to be chal?
Which is it easier if a bad thing happens, which is it more right? Which is, if a kedushin that takes place in a way we don't want, or a mekach takes place in a way we don't want, Which is more likely for us to say it just never happened?
Wouldn't it be kedushin harder because there's like a lot of implications for mamzerus and like?
So on the one hand, kedushin is harder to do what?
to just like annul and say that it wasn't.
But on the other hand, and Nekech Memkar is easier to undo. Right, so the stakes, right, of letting it happen in Nekech Memkar are not such a big deal.
Right.
But by Kiddushin,
there are great stakes, but
the stakes of letting it happen in the first place are much higher, so we might, right, so we might be inclined to prevent it from happening because we can't undo it.
Which is why we might use the word in the Asur.
But
that's stronger, more appropriate.
Yeah, I'm glad we have the word appropriate in everyone's vocabulary. I shall work on hept. And hept.
Oh, no, that's not a good word.
And lave as a, what is it? Ablute. Ablute is a verb. People always do their ablutions, but nobody ever ablutes. So, hey, Joy, going to Washington by saying, let's ablute. Yes, Jenna.
When we're looking at like the Gemara, it's the, I don't know the right language for this, but you have like the like instructive language, right? That's all focused on Kiddushin, right? And then the Maaseis are the ones that get into the Anima HaPeikahara, right? That gets into the Rav Gidel case.
In the Bavli, yes.
Right? Yeah, in the Bavli. So I don't know, like it's not that weird to me that he would see that as like a tangent on the general discussion that's happening around.
I'm okay with that. It's just interesting that he leaves that the language running out that Bechorora is introduced by the Gemara when we leave the case of Shlichus. Right? Nobody said that the reason that you shouldn't, that when, if your friend tells, right, when in the previous cases, nobody said that it's bad to marry somebody whom your friend sent you as an agent, right, as their agent to marry. Because it's like an Anim Hapik Bechorora. We only introduced Anim Hapik Bechorora when we got to the case of Gil and Riaba that didn't have Shlichus.
Right, but it's, yeah.
So
but
that's
maybe the point isn't the Shlichus. Maybe the point is someone's trying to do something and you're undercutting them in the Shlichus.
Right, so that's what Sipra Machla wanted to say, is that maybe my emphasis on the breach of loyalty was a false reading to begin with. And really, the presence of the shliach was just an accidental attribute. All having a shliach does is create ironclad evidence of the other party's interest. Right? If I appointed you a shliach, then it's really clear I'm interested in marrying this woman. You can't say, oh, I thought you weren't serious, because after all, I appointed you a shliach.
Although then you have to ask about why it's that. Like once he goes back and says, I guess because then it's like, you know, because the Rambam does say you have to go back and tell the person before you can take it yourself, right?
But that's okay, because once you tell the other person, presumably they're a rational
then
being.
They're no longer.
They have no hope.
Interested.
Right.
Yeah.
But I have to say that I don't find that convincing. But I understand the technical move is there.
Right.
It's hard for me to believe that the Shlichus isn't the critical part of the case. Yes.
So this is like a, I guess. Historical question. Uh-huh. Like, does the Rambam aim for brevity the same way that Mishnah does? Like, does he need to be
as
concise as
possible,
or no? Because the question is,
what would include in that case add? I think it's covered in all the halachot that he's discussed. Where is the case covered of X wants to buy something? He says, I like that too, I will go buy it. Where does the Rambam say anything about such a case?
He doesn't think it's a problem. He has other ideas about certain kinds of competition, and especially when that's with an Ani.
But saying it doesn't add and saying he doesn't think it's a problem are two very different things.
No, meaning that if he thought it was, like, needed to be set. Here's a question. Is an omission evidence for the Rambam or not?
Definitely evidence for the Rambam if including it would give us information, particularly if he leaves out a section of the Gemara. Right? So an omission is definitely evidence unless you can claim that it's redundant. So you can argue, if the Rambam leaves it out, he must think that, right, that's what Jenna and Sipra Machla was arguing, he must think that that's not really a relevant feature of the case, but you're really trying to argue the reverse, that he leaves it out because he thinks there's nothing wrong with that case.
There was a portrait in language. The question is the case fully covered by every other halacha?
So the answer is, it depends how you understand the case. I would think not, because it's the only case which doesn't involve shlichus.
Right, but if this is the fact that it's omitted, mean that he must be covered by every other Mishnah?
It's hard for him to leave it out, and it gets much harder to justify leaving it out when he borrows the language of Nikra Russia.
Right, unless he's deliberately omitting it, right? We don't think that.
Yeah, the deliberately omitting is going to be significant. Deliberately omitting for the sake of brevity, that's very. I would think that if it adds information,
then it's not justified. We have to argue is that there is another case. Pardon?
You have to add that argument doesn't add information.
Right, so you have to, now you have to understand, tell me how you understood that case such that it doesn't add information. Because it certainly does add information to the Shliach case.
And the point is that if it's some sort of agadita about what seems to be some known case in the for the Tanaim, right? The idea that but yet it doesn't have legal weight because we don't force.
So now you have to make a much stronger claim. So you want to make the claim the Rambam only quotes things that have legal force.
Yeah.
But the problem is that he doesn't say legal force, no, because he says, because in each of these cases, he tells me prefaces it by telling you it works. There is no legal force.
What do you mean?
He says, if you try and marry her this way, she's still married.
Yeah, you might think that she wouldn't be.
And by telling up her, you'd never have a husband that you hadn't acquired it. So the reason he tells you, he quotes this case not to tell you that it's wrong, but he quotes this case to tell you that it's not reversed, even though it's wrong.
That's a real question, right? Like, that's why the Mishnah has to say in the first place, right? It's like, why do we, does the Shaliach, we if it's a given that the Kiddushin sticks, then we wouldn't have to include the Mishnah.
In the Mishnah?
Yeah. So okay. Obviously, it's still not a given that the Kiddushin sticks.
What's the language of the Mishnah?
I just closed it.
Masha Esa Asui?
No.
Right?
No, that's in the Braita.
So what does the Mishnah say?
The Mishnah doesn't say anything at all. It's just a Braisa.
It's just a
Braisa.
So, the Mishnah just says Mikudesh Lashem. The Mishnah doesn't have the Braisa as the moral of the code. So you think the Rambam has to add that case in so that you don't have to reject the Havamina, that it doesn't work. And then once he had done that, he has to throw in the rhetoric of Ashkenaz and Russia. But when it comes to the case of Ani B'Hapich B'Charara, where there's no Havamina that we would reverse the transaction, so he does not feel in any way compelled to tell us that this is wrong. Albeit he still borrows the language of Nicaragua.
Yeah, and that's why the same thing for the Karka and the Pazalain, right? He has to say he's including the clause in the Yechon of Father Exla. He's making it clear he's buying it in his own money, and so just in case he might have thought something. This is the case where the purchase sticks, but then once we're including the purchase sticks, we have to say why it's behind money. Now, I'm not sure why the condition case is Nicaragua Russia and the Ma'ot case is
Ramayin.
I don't know.
And you're saying a very strong thesis, right? The very strong thesis is that the Rambam does not include anything, any statements of moral outrage, except to forestall the belief that the moral outrage will have a legal consequence.
Why wouldn't Ani Al-Hawai?
Wait, say that again.
You're making the claim that the Rambam only includes statements of moral outrage about a case for the sake of telling us that this moral outrage doesn't generate a legal consequence.
Or for some other reason. I don't know if he would just include random things that he thinks are inappropriate in the Mishnah Torah. Is that something he does?
Right, so that's an interesting methodological claim, that it's almost as radical as obvious in some ways. Right, so the Rambam has no interest, if we're using Mr. Samus' terms, the Rambam has no interest in moral regulation in the Mishnah Torah.
Maybe he does, but it could be that you have to justify. It also could just be that Ani Ma'apit Macharara, isn't straight up the
issue
where
you need
to impose.
Okay,
that's covered on the other cases.
That's the first stage thing. What I say is that is the mechanics of a solution. Then you have to explain why it's not important.
Yeah.
Right. So mechanically, that is one of the options you have. Right. And you have a number of ways of justifying that option, but it's not right. But it doesn't tell you why. Still have to explain why. But you're right. By analyzing the argument logically, that's one of the ways out. Right. The same way that one of the ways out is to claim that Shlichus is not relevant to the case, right, which is the way the Genesis from Ahla took the way out. Those are all plausible ways out. That's a useful skill to put it out and say, if I only treat it as variables, what are the values I could change?
Doesn't have any case, right, where someone's trying to buy something and someone
talks about the land from the non-Jew.
Yes.
But he doesn't even consider that any access of tradition.
I don't know. Hold that thought for one moment. Yes, Elliot.
So, and I think that all of Havamina's about the ability to regulate the transactions, because with the non-Jew, we tell the first guy to give back the money to the
the second guy to get back in line to the first guy. And also in the story of Anime Pepakala Bakhlal, we have Kavamita give back.
Uh-huh.
Secondly, I think the fact that we are making this sequel such a big deal, especially in Hill's Focus Fever, right? You have to emphasize that it's not, you're not MMI because you stole the guy's money to buy it. You're MMI because you had a sleuthhood. All the more so we should include the anime of paper card, because clearly there's a problem of being a MMI to sleuthhood. Which means I still like being a dyke in the last film, that something different. The Kola said about the Kalisebo, the start of the Kaku Melcha, Nikarasha, means not, doesn't have to do with sleuthhood, even though it sounds like it does.
Okay, that's a push, I think, but I like the reasoning. I like the reasoning up to that point. That one, I think, is a little bit of a stretch. So what I want to do is I want to re-ask the first question that I asked. So, right, what does the Rambam think about the Machlokes Rashi and Beis Tam? Yes, sir.
We
got it. Good. So now give me the three options. The three possible meanings of the statement we don't know.
Okay.
There's three possible options as a result. What does Rama hold?
Either he holds like a Rambam, or he holds like Rashi, or he doesn't think that categorization is relevant.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Okay, right, that's where it is. So the question is, are we so biased by the presentation of Rashi and Rambam that we think it matters? Maybe the Rama just thinks that is irrelevant. Now, of course, we have to complicate this. Because we have at least two different presentations of Machlokes Rashi and Beis Tam.
Yeah.
Right? One of which the categories Hefker Metzia on one hand and Mecha Sphiris on the other hand are actual categories, and the other is in which they just represent the categories Esther Sova Kamakar and Esther Ein Sova Kamakar. So you have to figure out if Rama thinks that one or both of these categories is relevant. Yes.
Also, this is a question, but we don't know the answer. I was confused about how Rashi doesn't really. We don't suck.
Nope.
So
yeah.
I don't really know, and I honestly can't keep straight how to reach out and how to use Rashi. So my question is, we know that they're in the Anima HaFeth case, which is clearly Nikarasha.
Mm-hmm.
Rashi thinks that the object is Hefker.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that he disagrees? Does that mean that we have a perfectly binary Machlokas, where for Arena Tam, if it's not Hefker, it's a sword, Rashi, if it's not Hefker, it's Mikar? Or we don't know how he feels about something he doesn't
know. No, that was what the Marshal had fun pointing out to us. You have people who think that Rebbeinu Tam is only argues in that case,
mm-hmm.
but really we go to everywhere else. And you have people who think that Rashi, right, that Rashbam only held it, right, a different case and wouldn't go as far as Rashi. So since nobody, we don't have Rebbeinu Tam's words, so it's right. So there are lots of different reports from Rebbeinu Tam. Some people report Rebbeinu Tam as making a very broad statement, right? But it might be that all Rebbeinu Tam originally said is, I think Rashi is wrong when he said this case is about Hefker.
And also, I've worked with him the other way, which is like we have many more allusions to the text. We have many more quotes from Rabbi, or alleged quotes of Rabbi Tam. We have quotes.
Well, the answer is the only thing we know about Rashi is that Rashi says the case of Ayin Apech B'Charora is a case of Hefker. To date, everybody that we have seen assumes that Rashi means if Rashi thinks it applies to Hefker, then Kal V'Chomer it applies to Mecha Chomemka. But Rashi himself never said this.
Okay.
Furthermore, we don't. Rashi might very well have said, the only way to explain this, Rashi might very well have said, you know what? Ani hafik v'charora, he didn't have jastro. So he thought ani hafik v'charora meant that you were actually chasing the cake down the street. And that only made sense if it's hefker, because why are you right? If it's hefker, he's just telling you that, and he's not.
Or machana.
Or machana, right? Maybe Rashi just thought that's the plausible thing, because if the ani is being hafik v'charora, I guess here's a simple way of reading Rashi. The ani. Right, if he's paying full value for it, right? So what does it matter that he's not eating?
So it must be that he's not paying full.
So it must be he's not paying full price for it, and that's how Rashi gets it. In this case, must be about Hefker and Metzia, but that tells you nothing about whether Rashi has a broad principle that is related to Hefker and Metzia. Just tells you that's the shot in this case.
Especially when it comes to the fish. If we want to say that Rashi believes that all issues of Hefker are a sore.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to offer a new explanation for the fish, but he does. He doesn't say fish are half grown, therefore it's a sore. He says a fish constitute a physical taking.
Yes.
So anyone who's claimed that Rashi has like some cohesive theory, are they inventing that?
No. All the The cohesive theory for Rashi is really just a function of Rabbeinu Tam's objection to Rashi.
Okay.
Right? Rabbeinu Tam objects to Rashi, and in some formulations, that is framed as a rejection of Rashi in principle. But Rashi might have felt like the Rambam, but that's not the relevant category. All he was doing was explaining the case.
Okay.
And so that's correct. We don't know, and unfortunately, we don't have Rashi on Bavasiya Chavalev, right? So we don't have any... Right, so Kabbalah, so we don't have to really know, right? The other place where he would make everything clear, he doesn't. So right, I think that the challenge here really would be to wipe out everything. Right, when you read the Rambam, you have to wipe out everything you know later and rethink it, because he does all sorts of anomalous things. One of the things the Rambam does that we wouldn't have expected. Right, so what's the one dramatic thing he does that you didn't expect at all? Yeah.
He makes you give him money back.
Right. That's a dramatic thing. Right? That's a dramatic thing that he does. What else? Right, what else does he do that he would not have expected?
When he translates basket sellers or the wool sellers to come in and have an outstanding debt.
Yeah.
It could be they translate that as. It's like not. He kind of maintains ambiguity with the market. He puts in the possibility that they borrowed in that funding. It's like totally changes the way they start competition.
Aha, okay.
I thought that was pretty
good. Pardon?
You also give another way showing you anything to do that.
Okay. That may be, once the Rambam goes, we have Rambam to come before or after the Rambam. Rambam's going to have influence.
After. Well, it makes sense, no? If they're stuck in town, so they got to live while they're stuck in town.
We also ignored all the conversation about competition when it comes to the people and
Hawaii.
This is
not going.
Yeah, like,
okay.
Turns it on to sound.
He lets the city decide how long people can stay.
Yeah.
And he gets rid of the idea of the people selling in the shuk can only sell to foreigners.
Uh-huh. Where does he do that?
He says, "Halacha Yud Gimel."
Where are you reading?
Halacha Yud in training tech club.
Which page is on?
Three.
He just says Yom HaShuk. He doesn't say
where. He doesn't say anything about
where. Maybe
we should Yom HaShuk. Well, they also have something. I feel Yom HaShuk.
No, that means they can't go to the
door. I don't know. That's like Agadah, though. I don't know if we have to make that rule for everyone.
But the Agadah, he passions like the Agadah, except leaves out what some might say is an important part of the Agadah. It's surprising to me.
Yeah,
what does he leave out?
That you can only sell, that the foreigners can only sell to other foreigners.
But that's also only one reading of
that's
the Gemara.
That's almost sure.
That's right. That's true. He's taking sides. It's not against the Chaliyah.
He's not against the Gemara. He's
Ellie, what do you want to say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, he has a lot of things. So, between adding the candies for including Ketanim and Shifras, he adds this thing of Knevis Das, which is random.
That was the next thing I want to talk about.
But
if
you that.
Is the problem, right? Is the potential problem, which is not, right? What's the Havana that you would ban storekeepers from distributing candies?
Wait, where is this
thing? Mechiro Yud Chas Dalad. Top page 3.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's so random.
Just random.
So I'm not sure what language the Caitlin, that's what Caitlin would use.
So what you're saying is, I will translate you, is that he has a series of 3 cases. The first case, he says Xenis Das. The third case, he says Ishud Xenis Das.
No, but first of all, he doesn't say Gnevis Das for the first case. He says Gnevis Das by all the cases. The last verse of the Halacha is Gnevis Das.
The potential issue is
Gnevis
Das.
So the presumption is that there is something that they're all that they're all related to one another for a certain reason.
Right. So it sounds like he understands that case as relating to Gnevis Das, right? What that means.
Yeah, and...
Or you just say there's no significance around categorization at all. It's just preserving
what else is going on in that paragraph?
Yeah, what's in the
Tarlevoix? Like, why are the husks of corn ending with this?
What is what?
Like, what was the husking corn or anything to do with
it? It just happens to be the previous case of the Mishnah, is how he's arguing. He's just quoting.
And he's saying all of these are...
So the first case is Gnevistas. The last case, he says, is not Gnevistas, but it's really... But that tells you that he has understood that last case totally differently than we did. Because we thought that the issue of Pilchei Charsha B'Shuv was a competition issue. Right? And the Rambam says that the reason that we don't stop you from doing it is because it's not Gnevis Das. What Gnevis Das is, I was understanding the case.
So I have a stylistic question. Does Rambam bring up like two different cases separately if there are two different like problems depending on where the halacha is?
Since the Rambam doesn't explain himself.
I mean, I'm saying, but like, the Rambam must have a methodology of like.
Yes, but what his methodology is, we spent 1,000 years trying to figure out what the methodology is, and every couple of years somebody writes another book in which they determine the exact legal methodology of the Rambam. And it writes exactly about this issue.
Methodology
of the Rambam is
clear. Yes. Tell us.
Right. As is the true meaning of the Marnavukim.
He brings things according
to
the
Rabbi Trotsky is always right.
He brings things in a nice Seder according to all of rabbinic literature.
And
some things are in a weird place, and he wishes he would have told you that they were from a weird place, but he didn't, and he's sorry.
And occasionally he throws in points that are just there for pedagogic purposes, but you shouldn't take seriously any of his rationales or
like which ones? Like
his verses are bad, and sometimes he throws in his own things, and the class gets going.
Yes,
not so far.
So with the Gnevat Das, I sort of understand. I don't have a good explanation for the Chandrani, but the Pilchei Rasha, I sort of get. Right, if there's a expected price, if there's a it's set at some level,
right? And I
you
blow
it.
Yeah.
I had a right to an expectation.
Who had a right to an expectation?
The other storekeeper had an expectation of what the price will be. You lowered it. You might say that's Gnevat Das. It's not.
Right, so that's a very interesting possibility, right? That what the Rambam means is that the Sha'ar is set by agreement.
Right.
Right? And so what you're doing is you're betraying the cartel.
Yeah.
How do you betray?
That's how I understood. I mean, that's not what my Avmina was reading it, but it's always how I understood what the word Sha'ar meant. That there's some type of body setting a price.
So the person you're going to, right? So the what would be wrong with being Pochet as a Sha'ar is not that you lower other people's incomes. Is that you fooled them because you pretended that you were, right? You pretended that we were all going to collude not to sign free agents, and you just used that, right, to be the only person who offered so and so, right, that you have a large contract.
Sort of.
Okay. Yes, Hank.
Maybe the real like, I mean, we haven't learned the sugya in Bava Metzia where this comes from. Maybe the sugya of that Mishnah really is Gnevis Das, and we're just bringing it in here to prove that even if it isn't Gnevis Das, there's still no concern of competition.
But we said it was Machloket, and we lined up according, right? We said Lema, right? We said, right?
Because the only person that Rav Huna can passively hold like this is Rav Yehuda.
So what's wrong with this, right? The only person who could possibly hold like this is Rabbanan say that... Rabbanan... Who says what?
The Rabbanan say that you can distribute these things. So they're obviously not concerned with competition, even though Rav Yehuda, the reason might... that he answers it is because of Gnevis Das, but he might theoretically agree.
Okay, you can do that. It's a little bit of a stretch because the case is so far from Huna's, but that's a fundamental problem in the Gemara anyway. Right. So and it's not hard for someone to say if the Gemara could have just said no. The only reason they answer it is because that's competition through deception. Right, that would have been the simplest. That would have been a better answer for the Gemara. Right, I say Rav Huna's Moda, you can't compete deceptively, you can only compete honestly. So we can say Tosfos that the Gemara gave one, has two answers, and he only gave one, but we are, but we're pushing it at that point. Yes, Ramatha.
Do you think it's Gnevis Das because we falsely believe that, lead people to believe that the Sha'ar is actually lower?
So they're going to make budgeting decisions for the future?
Yeah.
That's also pushing. Michigan, I think. Yes, Judah.
I want to say something that's not quite on the Knesset issue, but still in the competition.
Uh-huh.
So, in Halacha, in Hilchos Shchenim, Halacha Yud Bet, so the concern about teachers, etc., has to do with noise and whatnot, but then in Hilchos Tamid Torah, it seems like there you have an issue of competition on the same topic.
So where are we now?
Halacha Yud Bet.
Halacha Yud Bet.
Right, so
we're on page 3.
Yeah.
Five, four, three. Okay, so
I don't know if this has any major nakamina, but it struck me that there the issue of Milamatino code might have to do with noise in the neighborhood, but in Talmud Torah it brings in this kind of case, but it doesn't have to do with noise, rather it has to do with competition, and that seems to have some sort of implication on whether it's problematic or not. I don't know if that's important or not.
Okay, so he presents the same case from two different aspects.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's a good point. Trying to figure out how we can handle it. Okay. Other things? Yes, Ellen.
I think I thought I had perhaps for Gnevis Das is that when he lowers the price for a product, the consumer might think that everything is cheaper.
That was, not just for Malchus, he might think this is cheaper. He might create a false rumor of deflation.
Yeah. I mean, wait, so what Malchus was saying for all items in the store?
So I'm also thinking for this item that people will go out and believe they can come back and get it.
No, I'm saying that...
You're saying general deflation.
No.
Yeah.
I'm saying that if I'm a store and I sell 100 items, I have one loss leader that's 50% off, people come in thinking everything is on sale.
Yeah, so you're saying he's objecting to... Right, this is a loss leader, and he thinks that loss leaders are inherently deceptive.
I thought
loss leaders are inherently deceptive. The answer is no. Consumers are bright enough to figure out, right, to come back and only buy the item that you're selling at a loss.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead. You don't care, right? Caveat emptor. Yes.
Shouldn't the knivat dot that he's talking about here relate to the knivat dot by the corn in some way?
Would be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't care. How any of these make the two relate to each other?
Yeah, I don't know. Yes, Karim.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what the knivat dot is talking about, but in regards to competition, like in Hilchot Shchenim Halacha Chet, he makes a decision about that. Afilo haya mivne maboy acher einan yochlin l'mano asharei yesh v'nehem ota umanut. So like, that seems to say that it's not even about competition at all. That like you're not allowed to prevent somebody from another maboy to come into yours because you already have somebody in that profession. Because if it were about competition, then that would be like pashut, then you can let them in because there already is someone there. It seems to be about like it's annoying or it's like an inconvenience or something. So it seems that the Rambam sort of like doesn't really care all that much about competition, and I don't know, maybe that like sheds some light on the Hilchot Mechira case that like he really doesn't make it about competition at all.
So let's make the stark case. Is there any place where the Rambam unambiguously says that there is that what is wrong with something is competition, right? Is there any case that he understands as being related to that? Because shlichus is easy to get out of. Shlichus is not about competition. Shlichus is about deceiving the other party. He has no objection at all to the right. He has called it gaber zacha in terms of the nahar. In terms of the slaughtering two animals, we saw different versions, one of which had language of moral objection, one which didn't. The Rambam holds right in each of those that he has no language of moral objection. And when it comes to Metzia, he has no language of objection. When it comes to Peah, right, he says konsinoto. But you're not kones the person, right? This is Hilchos Matnas Aniyam Bet Yuchet. But who are we kones? We're kones the first person.
Is it the
Yes.
He read it as you read it.
Right. So he reads. So he reads it. So what's wrong there is somebody trying to take an unfair share of. Right. It's easy to say that it's somebody trying to take an unfair share of peah. So there is an unfair competition there, but it might be because our conception of peah is that it's really supposed to be divided among the aniyim.
It's like more gazelle of some sort.
Yes.
It's not competition. I mean, it's a stretch. I mean, competition is bringing consumers and like, I don't know.
I
feel like the biggest proof for it not being competition is that you don't have someone else trying to take it. It's regardless of it. It doesn't say if there's another poor person who wants it.
That's right. It's just your.
It's whatever.
Because you're doing it, it's cheating. By the next day, Akam Arayin Kimidbar, he uses no moral language at all. Right? When it comes to Mitzudas Chayev Ofos, So the standard case is it just in the Mishnah, which is Areza Gezel Dirayim. When it comes to right, so there we're just quoting the Mishnahs. And each of those, you can say there's some kind of right. Mitzudas Chayev. Each of those are cases really where it's not an issue of competition. It's easy to say somebody else already put work in, and you are depriving them of the products of their labor, right? Which is a very right. Which
also
is
with
Ani Amen Akev. Yeah, like Ani Amen Akev and Mitzudas Chayev Oth, right? And I don't think you have to frame that. So for a bit of time, we have to say, oh, what's different there is that there was tircha. Right? But it doesn't have to frame it as there was tircha. What you can say is, the problem is that you're depriving people of the fruits of their labor. Right? Not that somebody else already put in tircha, so it's not nice. Right? It's that their tircha really gave them a right to something. And the chenvene we get out of, and the shchenim...
That's where you can stop them.
The shchenim is you can stop them where?
When they're coming from outside the city and they haven't been taxed.
I mean, that's what I see, and they haven't paid a tax. Because that's... Right, so having paid a tax means, right, so that there could be some kind of notion that you're allowed to band together. It could be it's just unfair competition. You have a cost advantage if you don't pay taxes. It could be some notion of, you know...
Well, no,
because
if you're...
He doesn't say, right, if you're within the city, you don't pay tax. That's not necessarily unfair.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't think you call
unfair
competition that they don't pay
a
tax.
So let's write. So he says, and this is a noise issue. Right? Haya sham b'mavoi echad. All right. If it's somebody like that, then you can't even say atah posek chayai. So that's the one place he's not mentioned this category called posek chayai.
It doesn't exist.
And he said it doesn't work in this case.
What's in your car for saying that's a noise issue?
The first one, I think, was because it's Vein Mavoi, it's not an individual person. But the second case is really worth, right? The second case is, right now we're in Hilchot Shekhinim Perek Vav Halachot. There was in the Mavoi somebody among those Mavois who was an Iman, and the other people didn't object. There was a Merchatz, Rechut Rechayim. And somebody, right, and another person comes and makes another Merchatz opposite, or another Rechayim opposite. They cannot prevent him and say, he cannot prevent him and say, Atah posek chayai, even if he's from another Mavoi, because once the people of that Mavoi let in somebody of that Umanut.
No, that's a different claim that he's rejecting.
So let's try and read.
Atah posek chayai is never a claim. He says that the other possible claims of noise, Marvel and Ladera, once you've let the person in, you can't make that claim against the second person.
He's just being Mechriya the takeover of Ben Abedu.
Yeah, well, let's try it. What he does is he constantly, right, he constantly says, in case X, you cannot prevent him, which only makes sense if there were a case Y in which you were.
No, it's about a feeling.
Let's read it together. Okay? So, let's read, for example, Halacha Tet. Okay, so Rochlin, Mafzirin, Hamafzirin Bayerot, Ain B'nei Amidina, Yicholin L'Akva. What's the Havamina?
Good, because they travel.
Okay, so right, so when he bothers to tell you you can't, there must be a Havamina that you can, because there's a legal principle which enables you to do so, and the legal principle doesn't apply here. Right, he doesn't have a free market principle, there's no Havamina. Right, he has to believe that there are circumstances under which you can refrain from competition. And I'm arguing that the name for that principle is posei chayai. There must be at least one case in which somebody can say to the other person on top of posei chayai.
Okay.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Okay. If you want to keep, like, if you, I think there's a plausible reading that's strictly noise, like noise and traffic control.
Yeah.
And that is that people who come from outside the city may bring in customers from outside the city.
That's fine, but let's, right, so you could have said that's also noise, but there has to be a reason that you could think, so let's go back to what I think is the, I think it's clear that Yud Aleph, in Yud Aleph, he hasn't, right, there's nothing explicitly about competition, and Yud Bet is explicitly about noise, right, so the only place where there's any possible mention of competition in this, in Hilchot Shchenim Perek Vav, is in Halacha Chet, right, so we have to see if there's any, because Tet, Tova just came away out of. Yud through Yud Bet, you don't need a way out of it because he tells you it's all about noise. So it's only about Chet.
No, Yud is the soaping. That on Yom HaShuk.
On Yom HaShuk. You're right, so Yud is different.
You can get out
of
my closet.
You don't want people coming in and selling all over the city.
We can make a less broad claim. We can say that he doesn't care about your Illuminato on an individual level.
If he really wanted to so much, he would say only sell the foreigners on Yom HaShuk. He doesn't mention anything about the sacrum being...
He's fine.
If you want to limit...
That's right.
Well,
you doesn't... Like, well, so why would you prevent
there, what does it matter?
Traffic.
Because you could limit the selling...
Traffic.
People...
Okay, so let's go back to Chet.
But
Yom HaShuk, you want the other people to come in.
But the more Mitzum sounds clear is that he doesn't care within the city.
So why do you limit them?
Okay, let's go back to Chet.
I have a question.
I want to make one last effort to see if something meaningful can come out of it.
You want it restricted and
orderly. So, the members of the Mavoi can compel each other not to put an achayat in a bursi v'olachami bali omaniyot. So, the simpler way of reading this probably is that this is all about noise and he's not talking about one member of the Mavoi being able to prevent people from bringing in someone else of the same omaniyot, because if he wanted to say that, he could have framed it that way. It has to be, hold on one second, it has to be, so kofi b'nei mavoi zeh et zeh, so the question is, right, so we're reading it not as, right now, but I want to raise the possibility, not, right, does it mean any individual member of the mavoi can compel any other individual member of the mavoi not to set up this shop? Or does it mean that the members of the mavoi collectively can compel, can compel each other? Those are, right, is it a democratic principle, or a consensus principle? Hold on. Okay. Suppose there was already in that mavoi somebody who belongs to this particular umanut, which below michubo, which suggests the previous case, right? That this ambiguous the previous case. The previous case is not an issue of competition, because in the previous case there was no, right? There was no uman in that of that sort in that mavoi. But now he says I'm going to change the factor. Let's suppose I put in this mavoi I put in somebody of that umanut. And they didn't object to the umanut, so now, right? They have it can be understood that they have waived their noise pollution claim. Also, I said Shem Merchat Zochanu Rechaimim, Uvachavir Rav Osa Merchat Zacheret Kenegdo O Tachon Acheret. Eino Yachol Limono. So here is the to me the first thing is here there is a singular.
What do you
he
mean?
Cannot prevent him. Right, the first line, right, was ambiguous. Right, it sounded like it ends up being the plural, Shlo Hoshiv Beinehem. But he shifts in the second case from the plural to the singular. Eino Yachol Limono, V'Lomar Lo Atah Posek Chayai. Right, so the sentence here is he, namely the individual of the same umanut, cannot prevent. Right, this new guy he wants to have the same umanut on the grounds of saying Atah Posek Chayai. And then he shifts again. Even if he's from the members of a different mavoi, einan yecholin lemano. So the first case is the plural, and the third case is the plural. And the question, right? And both of those are talking about noise. And the question is, right? The question is, why does he shift to the singular in the second case?
Who says about noise?
Because they said the reason they can't do it is because they already allowed somebody of that umanut, right? Why does the fact that they allowed somebody of that umanut in? Right? They can say we want one, because we like it,
it's about competition. First of all, it's about competition. The noise thing is that, like, one can argue against that there's a very big difference between one business and two businesses. where one business is an outlier, but two businesses, you suddenly become the district of like bath houses, and you get it. So there's a difference. So that's not a good thing. I learned that in Yechalumno, because being that the mother was nice to him to let him move in, he can't use that. Like it's not fair for him to say that I have a monopoly, no one else can move in.
Why isn't it fair? No, being that the
Bnei Mavoi were nice to him to let him move in.
Yeah.
He has to be nice.
They were nice to him. They wanted him. And it's not even clear that they let him move in. He was there. After a while, he hung up a grindstone. And they said, fine. And now his neighbor says, okay, good, I'll hang up a grindstone also.
I think it's like mashman in the Lashon because they let him in. I mean,
I don't know. I don't see where it says in
the
Lashon because
they let
him in. Right, that's the explanation. Even if he's from a different mavoi, which is said, since he's from a different mavoi, they would be able to keep him out, right? Because you're allowed to keep him out anyone, but they can't now. They can't now. Right. The question is, do you think it's significant? I'm arguing it's significant that we shift from the grounds on which he can't prevent him to the grounds on which they can't prevent him. And the grounds on which they can't prevent him can't be competition. Because they are not competing. Yes, Obi.
So I don't see why this shift is difficult. To me, it's very much just reading like how we, just quoting from the Gemara. So we have the Kofin, the name of Kofin, to Lushkaino, Eno Kofeo, to Rapuna, Veda, Rav Yoshua's statement. It's still on the same halacha, and why it might be bad if he broke it off, but he sees Rav Huna, Beit Rav Yeshua, passing based on Chachamim. So we have the statement of the Chachamim, and then we have Rav Huna, Beit Rav Yeshua.
So now we're in the Avi school, that even grammar in the Rambam doesn't have to be consistent as long as he's just keeping the language of his sources. He can mix and meld.
I think the grammar for each case is consistent, and he's just taking the different cases from the Gemara.
Yeah. So there's no attempt on his part to be consistent. He's just citing his sources. And if his sources are dramatically inconsistent with each other...
Because this is exactly what the Riff does. We saw the Riff on this.
The Riff doesn't construct new sentences.
That is true, but the Riff equates the Rabbanan and the Kuna Breda of Yoshua, and so too the Rambam.
Okay. Conceptually, I have no difficulty with it. Right, I have a problem with a stylist like the Rambam shifting from singular to plural and not being bothered by it. But that again is a sensibility issue. Avi's not bothered by it in the slightest, it seems. Right, you can tell that. Thank you, Avi. I will spring it on him. Avi?
Yes.
So if the Rambam starts a sentence in the plural,
uh-huh.
And then he shifts to the singular.
Yes.
And then he shifts to the plural again.
Is this back in Halakhet?
Yes.
Yeah.
Does this bother you, or do you say no? Right, as long as the language of his sources shifted in that way, that he melds them without grammatical consistency, is not bothersome at all.
I read the Beit Yosef already, so I'm a little confused with the sources.
Right.
The Beit Yosef has a way of reading this that it's like there seems to be two different. There's two different sets of concerns. There's concerns of the Magoi, there's concerns of the Yuman himself.
Uh-huh.
The Yuman himself is not able to argue Kafasak Chayutai. The Bnei Magoi are able to able to keep someone out because of noise, and once someone's in, they've lost those
rights. So that is what I think is the correct reading.
Yeah.
And my argument is that it only makes sense if you think that there is some initial plausibility to a claim of Kupasak to Lachayai.
If there's any initial claim, he rejects the claim. I think
in this case.
In this case? No. I think this is him saying the Bahag is stupid. Get that Kobe question.
uh-huh. Why do you think he's responding specifically to the Bahag?
Because he doesn't like the Bahag.
So tell you what to. Let's make sure everyone's on the same page. Right?
Isn't the Bahag the one that Paskins like Rav Huna? Or did I misremember?
Paskins like Rav Huna. Right.
He says Rav Huna is wrong, and you thought Rav Huna, you can't make this claim. Don't even try to bring up the Bahag.
Uh huh. And he has to say Lomar Lo Atasha Sei Chayai. He has to explain which rationale it is he's rejecting.
Correct.
And he takes.
He takes the machlok of Rav Huna Breda Rishua, he passes like Rav Huna and Rav Huna Breda Rishua, he passes like Rav Huna Breda Rishua, and explicitly rejects it. Takes the time to explicitly reject the shita of Rav Huna.
Does he have a category called Yorid Lanasa at all?
Not
yes.
Sure.
Yes.
Aha. Okay, Mary, you want to say something before, no?
Yeah, but I think he's
Right, Abhinava, what do you mean, yes?
He brings up in Hilchot Deah.
He brings up in Hilchot Deah.
But it makes the fact that it's in Hilchot Deah might make you think, and it's in the context of the Hanagot of the Talmid Chacham, you might think that it's a Lifnim Mishurat Hadin to not follow the Lifnim Mishurat Hadin of Talmidei Chachamim being able to be Yorei Lumen HaTam of Achirim.
Aha, so maybe he makes it a super erogatory principle.
Yeah. Super duper.
Yes, super duper, right? Super ultra erogatory principle. Yes, thanks.
I think it might be said that in the last line of Halacha Chas, he uses the Lashon Yishvahen Lemanai.
Yes.
Which I read as being a Chia.
No.
I read Yishvahen as meaning they ought to.
That's very interesting. Why do you read it that way?
Because that's what Yishlahen means to me.
Because he's contrasting it, in Oyachol previously. Could I say Yacholim?
So why is that? What you're saying? What is it?
No.
Is that in context? Yesh.
I'm not contrasting it that way. I think Yishlahen means that they ought to.
Couldn't it just as easily mean they have the ability to? Yesh be Yadayim. Like we say, Yesh Kalach Biyad Chachavivu, according to our Yerushalmi, blah, 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 blah. But does that
have a right?
I think in Halacha, a lot of times Yesh and Yishahim sounds like Chova, but...
Yesh?
Okay, so this is a really interesting question in the Rambam. Right, in the Rambam, we have to look up other languages of Yeshalim in the Rambam.
Unless they're based on the source.
And see if they're consistent. It might be that we just lined up with the same ambiguity, because the sources are each ambiguous, and the Rambam just quotes the language.
And I think if this is correct, you have the 90%, then maybe when he says that the name of Mavayin, if he was from another Mavayin in Yochailin Mamadai, that means that they have a chiyuv. If they were able to, they would have a chiyuv to prevent. And since they don't have a chiyuv, therefore, they're not allowed to, and it's plural because the entire Mavi is acting on behalf of the individual.
So what you want to claim is that there is an obligation on the community to protect the livelihood of the individual except when they can't.
Yes.
Okay. I'm not convinced by the linguistic things, but the conceptual thing might be true. And the H line is an interesting point. I don't give you 90% yet, but you're welcome to go try and prove it, so it gets higher. Yes, Jenna?
So, I think I understand your reasoning of if he's saying you can't say like, now, then, like, there must be a category of it somewhere, but to me, I read it as, like, if you can't say it here, like, where could you, I didn't understand exactly what Abhinav was talking about, but, like, it seems to me like this would be, if you have a business set up in a mavoi, and someone wants to come and set up something right next to your own, and at that point you can't say you're infringing on my livelihood, then like, I would be possibly okay taking that as a categorical kind of...
Yeah, but the response is, no, the reason you can't do it here is because he has just as much a right to be here as you do.
No, because it's someone from another mavoi. He's fine with that.
But you're in the same city.
Right. So, so maybe you can't let someone, but then I think that's, you could go with Jehovah's property rights argument for why someone from another
starts on. So a really fancy way of reading is to claim, if he's from the same Mavoi, then you can't stop him because he's the same as you. But if he's from a different Mavoi, then you, so why can't you stop him?
You can't.
If you have no relationship with them at all. And they can't stop them because they already let you in. Right? That would be a really complicated structure in which we say that on the one hand, the only person whom you could theoretically refrain from competing is somebody who shares interests with you, otherwise you have no mutual obligation to each other. And in that case, it so happens that you can't restrain him because he has as much right as you. So that's where you end up with a categorical claim, that in Manashav. If somebody's from outside, you can't stop them because you have no relationship with them. And if somebody's inside, then you can't stop them because you have no power over them.
I mean, I would say, right, yeah. And I would say, he would say, even if you did have power over them inside, probably you couldn't stop them because, that seems to be he seems to be pretty fine with that kind of competition. But he he already has that taken care of with the noise, thing, so he's not even going to address it.
Right. We could have a much fancier version of the Rambam, by the way, where we could just say, you know what? The Rambam holds like the Rimigash, and he holds like the Ramban. So he thinks, A, that you never restrain competition as a benefit to consumers, and B, there's always a benefit to the consumers.
Right.
So all you do is put those two positions together. right, and in practice, he has no reason ever to talk to him that way. So it's a wholly impractical position. Once you pass it against Rav Huna, essentially, right, that argument about Tapasaka Lechayai, right, will have so... You could conceivably construct an artificial circumstance in which it might... Right, if you construct an artificial circumstance in which the only outcome of the competition is harming this person, but there's no benefit to consumers, he might agree with that, but he just thought that was such an implausible circumstance that it wasn't worth mentioning. Okay, yes, Miriam.
Also, the fact that he just leaves out the Aniyah Me'apech B'Chayra case, which is like the base case for competition, like that says something also about that, about his feelings towards competition, that it's just like not really so much worth caring so much about.
But you think it's very significant that there's a, right, we could read out, you know, he'd say, the reason he uses Nikra Rasha in the Shlichus case is to tell those of you who know the Gemara that he's not really a Rasha in the case the Gemara uses about. Right? He's only a Rasha in the other cases. Right? So it's a code to us. Right? And I don't think we're going to get further. I think that's about what there is in the Rambam. And the question is, do we really end up with this radical position? And then the interesting question is, so the Marshal just completely ignores the Rambam. Right? Just completely ignores the Rambam. Makes nothing of him. In fact, nobody we have seen previously seems to think the Rambam has anything important to say about anything other than the issue. Right?
He might not.
Like other than, well, if he really held...
There are people who know, at least mine too, though.
Yeah.
We saw that held that the Rambam not saying things wasn't.
Yes, that's true. But as we head into the Shulchan Aruch, right, it just doesn't... Right, it doesn't seem as if anyone out maybe that the best explanation of that is they just assimilate the Rambam to the Rimigash. And in practice, if you take the Rimigash flat out, then there really are no restraints and competitions because there's never going to be a case where competition is left out. The other possibility is to try and find somewhere between the Rambam in which he just never sees that issue come up, and which leaves space for somehow constructing some, right? For example, he certainly never addresses Runa's competition. So you can put Runa's competition back in. We can put in predatory pricing if we read the, by reading the Egozim and Klayovic as, or as the Sept, the Wasp leaders, right? We could put in the Rambam, right? We could say, the Rambam holds like the Rimigash, but like the Rimigash, of course, he understood that competition only benefits consumers in a genuinely competitive market. So the Rambam would make all the regulations necessary.
And he should have had stuff about nine.
He should have said it.
Yeah.
I'm saying, I don't want to throw things in there that aren't being said. So I can throw anything in that's not being said.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous that we're going to say, because we're going to make an argument from silence and say, well, since the Rambam doesn't have any restraints on competition, therefore the Rambam must oppose all regulation.
Yeah, that's something we're missing.
So I don't think that follows. It could be that he, right? And I think what that is conflating a general, I guess, let's try and frame the formulation this way. Let's try this. The Rambam does not believe there is any moral objection to competition.
Wait.
Not that there's any moral objection to any honest competition. That does not commit the Rambam to believe, right? Therefore, the Rambam believes that the sole goal of market regulation is to benefit the consumer. That in no way commits the Rambam to avoiding regulation. It all depends on what the Rambam thinks is the best way to compel regulation. If he thinks the markets are deformed in a particular way, so he'll legislate. Right? All it means is that he has no commitment to any particular form of restraint, because he doesn't see the goal as inculcating virtue. He doesn't see anything wrong with competition. He just thinks the goal is to benefit the consumer, and he thinks that all the legislation in the Gemara is, right, if you find any cases which are talking about restriction of competition, so he takes the Rimigash as a given, and he assumes that there would be no regulation if that would harm the consumer, and therefore he doesn't see any of it as having any halakhic significance, because all it is a pragmatic attempt to adjust the markets properly.
Is any of this based on what he actually says, or this is all based on what he omits?
This is based on what he omits. The only what I'm putting in is the same way that Eliot wanted to say, but he just follows the riff. So he also very famously says that the Rimigash is really, really, really smart.
I feel like
he would have said something about Takanat.
And I think it's very difficult. It's very difficult to say that he doesn't have any moral associations with competition, given Hilchot Deah. Even if it is Lifnei Meshurat Hadin, there is some moral judgment there.
You could easily say, like Damon was saying yesterday, that he doesn't believe in front-ended competition of however he said it, but he does believe in front-ended moral regulation. And more so, with the Rimigash, if it's all about the Rimigash, there should be something about non-Jews in here, because, right, if we care about lower prices, we probably only care about lower prices for Jews. And Rambam has nothing in here about non-Jews.
He doesn't have any cases where he distinguishes between the consequences for Jews and non-Jews.
Right, and that seems to me inherent in the Rimigash's position.
That, you know, since the Rimigash says all we care about is consumers, so you assume the Rambam is not really that modern Orthodox. That he just sees himself as part of an integrated economy.
Yeah. Right. I guess.
That's an interesting thing. Tobo, you wanted to say something? No?
I think we have to consider what we haven't talked about in like 2 weeks, and that is if we're operating in different empirical realities, then what different Rishonim feel is a given is going to be different.
That's right. That's how I'm arguing. But I'm arguing the Rambam recognizes this, so he sees no point in codifying as halakha things which are merely pragmatic economic regulations that will change based on the circumstances.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know. Did the Rambam think that he was writing like halakha for everybody?
Yes.
In other
places? He thought he was replacing the Gemara.
Okay.
Right?
I mean, the thing is that this would unconfuse the maybe it's about better evidence for your claim, right? Is that the Rambam was very aware of different economies in a way
that
many other Rishonim that we've read were not.
Very likely. That would exactly support my claim. So you're going to leave out anything.
Reticence, yeah.
You're going to leave out anything, which is economic system dependent.
Yeah. That's it.
Okay, yes, Fran.
Yeah, how does the Rambam relate to the Rishon that we learned early on, who reads the entire Sugya in Baba Vasa as being about noise?
The other one?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's
much earlier. Yad Ravah is later, right? So how the Rambam relates, you know, it's more the question the other way around.
Did the Rabbeinu Tam have the Rambam?
No.
Rabbeinu Tam was before the Rambam.
They're contemporaries. Okay. I think that's probably... That was good. I don't know if it could answer. That was a good conversation. Thank you. And you guys got, I think... just about everything that needs to be gotten. I think we mentioned the Rambam quotes the Gemara's case in Rechikin and the Siddur Hadag and Hadag.
He does at some point.
No, he does not.
He quotes the Mishnah about Gezel with Ibrahim.
Oh, that was so weird.
Yeah,
wait, what? Sorry, what was your question?
He has, like, no idea what that means. He definitely means that Maharshal.
He doesn't quote it?
No,
he quotes a different case.
Gezel and Ibrahim.
Yeah, the Gezel and Ibrahim case is a quote of a Mishnah, which is talking about actually enticing fish out of the other person's trap.
Yeah, is Gezel and Ibrahim a Mishnah?
Yes, there is a Mishnah which calls that case Gezel and Ibrahim.
Do you have any idea what that means?
Gezel
and Ibrahim? That's
Binyar
Rabbanan,
no? Some Rishonim do interpret Mishnah Dag as
as the fish is in the net and you
yes.
take it out.
Rashi, so it could be used for this passing like a that case.
No, Rashi, yeah.
Or it could
Rashi
be
no, Rashi says that you chase it to its hole and the
yes.
guy, other guy
yeah,
hasn't
yeah.
had it, so it's not really in his.
Well, but not physically.
Yeah, I think
Batua.
That was
Batua. Batua. No one else said you're. No one said you're physically
no.
taking it out of the net.
Yes.
Oh,
right.
Doesn't
yeah.
the doesn't the Nuka Yosef say there's like a box that the fish goes into and you go and you?
No, you get it to swim out of the box.
You get it to
swim out of
the
box. Okay.
Yeah,
it's
out of the box.
Okay,
fine.
It
was
in
his hand.
Yeah, but in this case you're dead.
That's different. Still fish.
Very hard to taste it.
So
yeah.
I don't think we're gonna. I don't think we're gonna get much further, and that's a really challenging thing because the River Rishon is really supposed to, is supposed to be a very dominant figure, and in the end he says almost nothing. So two possibilities: he says nothing because he really thinks there is nothing, or he says nothing because he really thinks there's a lot, but it's not halakha. In quite the same way. Is there? I don't know.
What was the chuva?
Oh, we found it. It was it was Freiman 273 or something.
Or 260. We'd look it up.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's put in the conversation as well. Shulchan Aruch is more expansive, but I'm not sure. Yeah. Well, I look forward to see, have you construct consistent positions. Because mostly Shulchan Aruch seems to be taking details and making them much, much longer. It's hard in the Shulchan Aruch to say they don't have any concept of competition. Right? That's very difficult to claim.
And Mark clearly has.
Yeah. They have a very, very difficult to claim. Right? But because you can quote both sides of every issue, and right, that's part of the role of the Shulchan Aruch, you can just quote Yisharim and Yisharim. So pulling out this is Shita is hard there as well. It's not even a methodological question. To what extent? Right? For some people, the whole task, halakhically, is to figure out what the Shulchan Aruch did. And once you figure out the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, so now you can narrow the world down and start from there. And for other people, which I tend to include myself among, so the goal is to make the Shulchan Aruch, if you think you're trying to be highly creative, which is what I think we need to do, right? So the goal is to make the Shulchan Aruch as unclear as possible, then you can do it and then you can ignore it.
Can you have that? You have it? Are you still recording that?
I am, actually. So, right, so in this case, I think that I guess I do think that in this area, it's unlikely to me that the right way to construct the halakha in this area, which I think needs to be done, is to figure out what the Shulchan Aruch says and work within those parameters. I'd rather open it up. But at the same time, if you come with something that's negative, you know, to possible like a shita the Shulchan Aruch never mentions, you have to at least prove you never had access to it. right, and then, right, so that there's a Tellus B'Dor Mishnah type phenomenon. Yes?
But it is important that they never do mention the Marchikin Yadayim from the donkey. And that's really the only case that people use to argue for piety.
Then the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch?
The Rambam and Shulchan Aruch don't have that case. And that's really the only case people can use to argue for piety.
So we should say, yes. In fact, right, if you look at the Rishonim, right, so the fish case is very, very important in terms of generating legislation. You can see how the fish case falls out of the Rif of the Rambam, right, and gets reintroduced in the reactions to Rabbeinu Tam and the Tosafos. Right, so the question is, right, what, you have these, there are two very different conversations going on, and why is there, how do we reconcile them? And you guys should go eat. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, okay.